week. Good morning, Mike.
Oops, I should turn my microphone on. Hello, Jay. Sorry about that.
There we go. Of course, Mike, today is brought to you by the Green Mill in downtown St. Cloud. All right, so Mike, let's talk about the Twins who stopped a three-game losing streak last night, and the Miami Marlins had won eight straight, so a couple of streaks were stopped. So the Twins won the game 2-1. Your thoughts on that Twins victory?
Yeah, they needed it, no doubt. I mean, they're still hanging out there. They're still in wild card contention, so there's no need to, cash in the season and trade away all the assets and all that, because you just never know, particularly with the way this team on occasion has gotten on a roll and on occasion has pitched, including last night. Again, they definitely caught a break with the umpire situation. It's an interesting rule. In that the umpire, so for fans that didn't see it, it was a 2-1 Twins lead. They're in the sixth, the ground ball kind of up the middle, a speedy runner in scoring position, and it ricocheted off the umpire's ankle, just kind of grazed it into center field. It was going to be a base hit all the way. The run scores, but they wave it off. They put everybody back. In fact, they put the runner all the way back to second base. He only advances by rule if there was a runner behind him. In other words, everyone gets a base and that's it. But if there's nobody to force you to advance the base, you're stuck there. Had he been positioned behind the infielders, the umpire, and it hit him, it would be a play on, but it's kind of like when the ball hits the base runner and that becomes an out. Now, this didn't become an out. This is a single for the batter, but it takes the run off the board, and Brock Stewart then strikes out the next guy, and instead of it being 2-2 and still in the middle of a tussle, it's 2-1, and you move on to the next inning. So they caught a break, but that said, this team's probably due a break or two. They've had some tough luck over the course of the season, so no need to apologize for anything there. It's a road win. Another good pitching effort. Obviously, the offense still has to come around, just two runs. It's going to be hard to win games if that's all you're scoring. But the defense and pitching was enough to get it done.
Why do you think the offense has struggled? And it hasn't been all season, but quite a bit this season, that they just have not been living up to the expectations.
Yeah, it's a good question. They have had some guys really struggle. And if I had to say one thing, I think it's strikeouts. They just strike out too much. And I know that there's many in the analytic world that say strikeouts are no different than any other out. I just vehemently disagree with that. I'm not even one of those guys, Jay, that's like, oh, well, you got to move a runner over, hit to the right side so a guy gets to third, bunt the ball to advance a guy. I don't like giving outs away in that case, but I think all the analytics we see base the idea that a strikeout is no worse than any other out after the fact. So it's like, well, that inning, it wouldn't have mattered if he struck out or if he grounded out, but the fact of the matter is, when you put the ball in play, you get on base about 28% of the time, either through base hit on average. I'm talking the entire league now, on average, either through hit or error, and something positive can happen. So if you analyze it as the ball's in the pitcher's hand, there's just no way that a strikeout or a swing and a miss, I guess, is a better way to put it. There's just no way a swing and a miss is better than a ball put in play. It just isn't. But the embarrassment of a strikeout, you know, as we were growing up, and again, I'm not trying to be the old man yelling at the clouds or anything like that, but, you know, back in the old days, you'd be embarrassed to strike out. Now there's no embarrassment at all. They want high backspinning launch angle fly balls that occasionally will fly out of the ballpark, and if it's an out, it's an out. No big deal. You win a game by hitting 2-3-run homers, and that's how the analytics say you got to go about it today. There must be some truth to it because everyone's doing it that way. But to me, to answer the question, so many strikeouts, and strikeouts become such rally killers, and it's been some untimely things. And they've got guys, you know, Matt Wallner has just struggled. Royce Lewis has just struggled. Even Correa his defense is incredible. He's maybe the best defensive shortstop in the game, certainly a top two or three defensive shortstop, but he hasn't been great at the plate this year. And when you pay a guy that kind of money and he's not really producing, that's not great. And even guys who have played well, Buxton and Bader, and France, they strike out a lot. Their outs come via strikeout, and it just kills a lot of rallies. When's the last time you've really seen a Twins rally where they strung four or five singles and a walk and a bouncer, you know, a pass ball, and all of a sudden you get four runs out of it? It usually is, you know, a run here or a run there, or someone hits a three-run homer, and that's what helps. So you don't see that really league-wide, a lot of rallies. But strikeouts, to me, are the killer for this team.
Jim, the All-Star starters were announced yesterday in the American League. Byron Buxton didn't get voted in. You had a couple of Tigers make it. Javier Baez and Riley Green. Green's had a good year, but Baez, to me, it just seems like not necessarily the most deserving guys get in when you have fan voting. Ryan O'Hearn is the DH. I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, that's always been the age-old question. In following just a few of the national writers, they seem to not be very upset. They didn't think there was a lot of snubs. I think Buxton will make the team. I mean, someone from the Twins has got to make it. And Buxton, you know, every team gets one guy. Buxton's probably the guy. I think Joe Ryan has an outside shot. Juan Duran had a chance, but, you know, he had that little three-game hiccup back-to-back-to-back with Houston and one other team in there that probably, because the margin is so finite, right? You're looking at five or six guys for one or two spots per se, so it's hard. Even the loss the other night with Joe Ryan, he pitched great, gave up one run, and ended up getting a loss. 9-3 is different than 8-4 maybe in this, and I know they don't look at wins like they used to either because of the analytics, but even so, we shall see. But I think Buxton will get in. Somebody's got to get in, and he's been the best Twin. There's no doubt about that. So he'll make it. It'll be great. He's from Georgia. The game's in Georgia, and I'm sure he'll enjoy that down there.
Mike, the Minnesota Lynx are going to play tonight. They take on Washington at 7 o'clock. They're coming off a loss. I think you mentioned yesterday that it's kind of a busy schedule for them. What do you think about their chances of Washington gave them one of their two losses?
Yeah, you're right. And that was just a week ago Tuesday that they lost at Washington. You know, speaking of the Twins having a few strikeouts, the Lynx have had a couple of games. Look, it's hard to really nitpick. They're 14-2 and 14-3 if you count the game on Tuesday against Indiana, which wasn't a great loss because Indiana didn't have Caitlin Clark and you were up by 13 there if you're the Lynx and you end up losing it. And I get it. They have in a couple of games just gone ice cold. They went over 8 minutes without a point in that game on Tuesday. And they scored just 64 in the loss against Washington last week. So their offense has got to get going. They've got the best player or one of the top two or three players in the league in Nafisa Collier. And, she didn't have a great game the other night. You know, it's hard to, you know, put up a double-double every night, and she was just 6 of 18 in that loss to Indiana. So I would expect a big game from her. I think the Lynx will win this game tonight going away. They'll get to 15 wins in the regular season. But you're right, the schedule, so this Washington team has not played since Saturday, and then the Lynx will host Golden State, and they've been off since last weekend as well. That will be Saturday. So Minnesota will have played Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, four games basically in a week. And one of those was not scheduled, of course. It was in there because of the Commissioner's Cup game Tuesday. And Golden State will have, I believe it's 6, maybe 7 days off in between. Sometimes rust is worse than rest, and we'll see what happens. But yeah, it's been a busy stretch for the Lynx. But look, they play as a team. We've talked about that all week, and I like them to win tonight.
Mike, in your role as the voice of Gopher football and basketball, keeping an eye on NIL is probably something that you do. How is that changing, and how do the Gophers stack up with the rest of the Big Ten for especially football and basketball?
Yeah, it changes almost daily. There's new court cases, and in fact, every day you hear about I think there's a Rutgers and Northwestern wrestler who filed a lawsuit yesterday. Some of that relates to the revenue share, the whatever you want to call that, the salary cap money, the house settlement money. That's the $20 million that's going to come straight off the top of the athletic department budget and get dispersed as payments to players. Each athletic department gets to decide how to spend that, what players get it, what players will not get it. That's separate from the NIL. NIL then is separate in that it's the name, image, and likeness of somebody. That means autographs, selling T-shirts, making public appearances, doing commercial endorsements, whatever those things are. That's what the intent of it was. It really turned into a kind of a pay for play, and they're trying to put some bumpers on that, some guidelines, so to speak, on that to equalize the field just a little bit more. So it's changing every day, Jay. Right now, basically, you've got this $20 million revenue share, and again, at least in Minnesota's case, about 75% of that $20 million will go to football players. So that's roughly, what, $14-ish million as part of the payroll. And then anything that you raise separately in terms of name, image, and likeness, the collective, the Dinkytown Athletes, which you've heard so much about, that's separate from that. I do think that this revenue share created a bit of an, it does lessen the gap, not much. I mean, the Habs will still get most of the good players, and the next tier will get the next good players, and it's really all relative to what it was, you know, pre-NIL in terms of the talent pool doesn't change. It's you know, the top 100 players every year are the top 100 players every year, and if you're a top 100 player making, you know, $1 million at Ohio State, that's no different than 10 years ago, a top 100 player, you know, not making anything at a school or making money under the table in the SEC, however you want to look at it. But it is what it is. The talent pool doesn't change year to year. So it can be all relative. But it changes every day. There's new lawsuits. I think they're starting to finally get some guardrails on this thing. The Gophers have changed. They've become a little bit more aggressive in fundraising. The head coaches have really, P.J. Fleck and Nico Medved, in terms of the two major sports, revenue sports at Minnesota football and men's basketball, in terms of the most profitable, they're very aggressive. They're going out and meeting with boosters and companies, and you know, every nickel and dime that they can raise gives you a better chance to formulate a nice roster to win games in a very, very competitive Big Ten conference.
Mike, we're out of time. If people do want to check out the Go Gopher podcast, how can they do that?
Yep, they can go to TalkNorth.com. All of the podcasts that Talk North offers up, led by Jim Suhan, are there. You can also follow me on X or Twitter at MikeGrim3. We usually tweet it out. I've got, in fact, taping a podcast just about as soon as I hang up with this one with Tanner Morgan, former Gopher quarterback, and that'll be out later this afternoon. We'll catch up with Tanner. He's got some quarterback camps and some 7-on-7 tournaments that he's hosting for youth football players this summer, and his wife is expecting as well. So we've got a lot to talk about.
Mike, thanks for filling in for Jim this week. Appreciate the conversations, and look forward to talking to you soon.
You got it, Jay. I always enjoy hanging out with you. Thank you.
That's Mike Grimm, voice of Gopher football and basketball, also Eminent Sports Director, joining us here on WJON. He's filling in for Jim Suhan. Conversation with Mike today brought to you by the Green Mill in downtown St. Cloud. Next on WJON, we've got World and National News from ABC. That's brought to you by Executive Express.